When I was in law school, back in the day, the law of torts or personal injuries could be summed up in two words, reasonable man. We've now changed that nomenclature to reasonable person, but the concept is the same. Defendants in personal injury cases will be found negligent if a jury finds that they did not act with the care of a reasonable person. If a jury can imagine that a reasonable person would have driven differently, put smoke detectors in rental properties, or not shot off bottle rockets in their backyard, then the defendant will be negligent, and therefore liable, if that negligent action caused the plaintiff injury. But how does a juror decide what a reasonable person does? First, the reasonable person is not meant to be the average person. Average people speed in their cars sometimes and decide not to shovel their walks when it's really cold outside. But the reasonable person drives the speed limit at all times and generally follows all laws, ordinances, and legal rules. So if a defendant is found to have violated any relevant law without a legal excuse, then the court will instruct the jury to find that the defendant did not act as a reasonable person. However, though the reasonable person is an important thought experiment, it can be quite problematic. In theory, the reasonable person standard should be objective, but in practice, most jurors probably just imagine themselves as the reasonable person. This distinction shouldn't matter that much in most cases, but it tends to mean that for most juries, the reasonable person becomes white, male, heterosexual, and middle-aged or older. Other problematic issues with the reasonable person concept are embedded in the law. For example, the law around the reasonable person has developed to include the physical characteristics of the defendant, but not the mental characteristics. Therefore, if the defendant has impaired vision, uses a wheelchair, or is a child, then the court instructs the jury to decide what a reasonable person with those characteristics would have done in the same circumstance. However, if the defendant caused another harm while having a schizophrenic episode, then the law ignores that fact. Therefore, if I swerve my car because I am hallucinating, then my actions will merely be judged against how a reasonable person drives who is not hallucinating. This distinction may have made sense in an era when mental illnesses were hard to diagnose and easier to feign at trial. However, in modern times, when much more is known about the physiological evidence of mental illness, this distinction seems steeped in prejudice. Under the law, someone with a physical disability is not required to act with the care of an ambulatory person, but someone with autism or Down syndrome is required to act with the care of a person without those issues or otherwise be liable. Defenders of the distinction argue that third parties can identify those with physical disabilities and use more care around them, guarding against what would otherwise be negligence. However, third parties cannot easily identify those with mental disabilities. In addition, if the reasonable person standard took into consideration mental characteristics, then the law would have to account for a defendant's low IQ, clumsiness, tendency to be distracted, and habitual foolishness. The law of negligence would generally cease to exist as defendants would be judged against only themselves. Foolish 17-year-old drivers who daydream, clumsy homeowners who try to build a treehouse with no skills or experience, new restaurant owners who are unfamiliar with the temperatures at which food should be kept to prevent spoilage. Reasonableness is very much in the eye of the beholder, and the concept of the reasonable man or reasonable person was intended to get jurors to make more objective decisions about whether their neighbor had been unreasonably careless or not. However, at the end of the day, few jurors will hold defendants to a standard higher than they hold themselves, or lower. This is Christine Hurt.